When I first found out that I was pregnant with Stephanie, I believe I was approximately 5 months pregnant. And when she, 2 weeks before she was born, her dad and I split up. And the night before she was born, I started bleeding. And so I went into the hospital, and she was delivered, like, I believe it was around 3 hours later. And she was premature. And as soon as she was born, obviously they knew something was wrong, because they wanted to whisk her out of the room very quickly. And I asked them if I could see her first. And so they brought her back and let me see her for just a minute, and then they took her. I'm not sure how many hours later it was before they took her down to Loma Linda. There was an ambulance that took her. I remember crying that evening and talking to the nurse, and I didn't understand what was happening. I was like 24 years old. Had a baby bed and different things, but I ended up going and buying a car seat and some sleepers and different things, you know, because I wasn't sure if it was a boy or a girl before she was born. And so I bought some little girl things and headed down to the hospital. And so when I got down there, I never ever dreamed that I would be told that there was nothing that they could do to help her, and that she was gonna die. I remember being really upset, and I said, "You mean you can put a man on the moon, but there's nothing you can do to help her?" And he said, "No." And I had called my mom, and I said, "Mom, you really need to come out and see your granddaughter." I said, "She's so beautiful. You have to see her before she dies." I got a call from Dr. Deming on Friday afternoon, and he told me that there was a Dr. Bailey who had been out of town, and he had done some research doing transplantation.
About 10 years ago, when I was in training at the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, I became deeply impressed with the fact that we'd seen a number of babies with incurable heart disease, incorrectable heart disease, babies in whom you could only experiment surgically with. And it impressed me that what those babies needed really was heart replacement.
We were a little stymied about how we were going to find donors for human babies. No one was volunteering dead babies' hearts for transplantation. And so we began to actually study the possibility of cross-species transplantation using baby baboons. We had a number, a litany really, of babies that came and were diagnosed and died. And for whatever reasons, along came this baby, Stephanie Faye. Doug Deming, one of the bright young neonatologists, got on the horn and he talked to baby Faye's mother and said, "You know, we have this protocol down here for heart replacement for a baby like yours. It may be that your baby doesn't have to die, at least not without some effort at saving her."
We bundled Stephanie up and took her down to Loma Linda to meet with Dr. Bailey.
And so we went over everything and tried to be pretty objective about it.
I wondered if the doctor was a mad scientist. I'm sure I had the same reaction as anybody else who first heard it. But when you get right down to it, it's just an organ, and it's a life-saving organ.
That it was highly experimental, and we weren't sure where it was headed. But without it, their baby was going to die.
At that time, I gave Dr. Bailey the okay to begin tests to see if she was going to be compatible with any of the baboons.
And Sandy Cannarella, Nelson Cannarella, who had been our external, if you will, consultant in immunology, or one of them, from New York, needed to be involved if we were going to do it. And in fact, before we chose to go ahead with it, I phoned her and I said, Sandy, are we ready?
And he says, Sandy, how are we doing on the experiments? And I said, well, I just finished the last one. It looks really great. As soon as I finish with my crew here, I'm going to give you a call. So just hang on, because I know there's 3 hours difference. You know, he's got time. He would not let me hang up. And finally he said, okay, so then you would be able to tell our administration and the IRB that it's okay to go ahead. And I said, absolutely, I have no question about it. And he said, good, because I have a baby and 6 baboons. I almost dropped the phone.
So for the next week, it was, I was still staying in Barstow, and my mom would stay with Beau during the day, and I would drive up in the morning and come back in the evening, and I was doing that every day. The hospital asked me if I wanted to stay in an apartment where it would be closer to the hospital, where I wouldn't have so much driving to do. And I said yes, and so Beau and my mom and I started staying in an apartment down here.
Teresa was just so brave. I can't imagine what it had to be like to be that mother, to make those enormous decisions. She was a rock. You know, when I think about what she went through, just what I went through was terrific, and it wasn't my child. And I think she did the only thing she really could do being a mother. And that was to say, yes, I want to do anything I can to save my child.
I know that she almost died like the night before her surgery, because I believed that her lungs were filling up with fluid. And I had met Bill Hinton, and he was a chaplain at the hospital, which he became like a father figure to me.
The day before, I was told the surgery is going to be tomorrow. And I had met Teresa and the father, and we had a chance to get acquainted. And the day before the surgery, we made an agreement that the morning of the surgery, they were going to take her about 7 o'clock, that we would be there at 6 o'clock. She instead, when I got there at 6, I asked where she was. Oh, she'd been in with the baby for an hour and a half.
At 6 o'clock, the three of us met, Len Bailey, Waldo Concepcion, and myself. We were the three musketeers, and made our final plans, and Waldo and I decided to go out for a walk.
So this is the uncertainty. There's no precedent. You just don't have there any back history. So it's exciting, but it's a lot of also sober responsibility that you got to be sure that everything is okay.
We were walking away from the hospital, and we were watching the time because we knew we had to be back at 6:30 to start. And when we turned around, the clouds opened up, and the sun came out, and a rainbow came right down into the institution. It was a phenomenon that just I will never forget. And I said, you know, Waldo, this is going to happen, and it's going to be okay. Because you can imagine how nervous we were. We were scared to death. And then we started down the journey of one of the hardest things we had to do, and that was to take that animal, because we felt very close to these animals. Sorry. It still bothers me. It's very difficult to make these decisions sometimes.
And so we chose the most compatible baby baboon for her. And we did the transplant as if we were doing any other open-heart surgery in a baby.
You know, I knew that there was a chance that she wouldn't come out alive, and I knew that there was a chance that she would. And I stood there, and I was pretty emotional,
the baby, and she and I walked down with bassinet or whatever it was on wheels and went all the way down to the elevator, then down the elevator and to the door of the surgery, and something very special happened there. They stopped just before going through the doors, and she went up by the little girl and bent down and loved her, kissed her, and touched her on the cheek, I think, and then said, I love you. As soon as she said, I love you, then they moved the thing on into the surgery, and there we stood looking at a door.
And there was a lady that came around the corner. And I don't know who that lady was to this day. I believe she was a nurse or one of God's angels because she handed me a little card, and it was had the poem Footprints on it. And I had never read that poem before. I still have that card in Stephanie's Bible. This is Stephanie's Bible, and it's been well used. And I bought it for on October the 23rd, 1984. There it is. This was the card that the angel handed me.
We have the privilege today of being in the very room, room 3, and the university operating room, theater suite. Room 3 is where Baby Faye's operation occurred. Just imagine, if you will, Baby Faye on that operating table, under those lights, having her operation 25 years ago.
It was so exciting and nerve-wracking and frightening all at the same time, and it was all very quiet and yet busy, like you would expect it to be, but a very together. It was a very beautifully orchestrated and coordinated team that you could see had worked together before.
So we brought the donor heart up through the stairwells and the hallways, up through the back way, and then in through the door over here, and deposited in cold saline over near the operating table. And I scrubbed in and started the operation on Baby Faye.
And then the big moment came when, you know, you look into this child's chest and there's no heart there. You know, when they take that heart out, it's really very frightening. And, you know, when we looked at her heart, everything that we, you know, knew about it before was there in front of us then. And clearly this child would not have lived in any way. And then, of course, they brought the baboon heart in, and it was the perfect size, absolutely perfect. And he had that heart in no time, and then the big moment came when you start to rewarm the baby, let the blood flow through the heart, and you're waiting for that first beat.
The phone rang, and you could hear a pin drop on this unit, which is unusual on an ICU unit, because what we wanted to hear one piece of information, was that heart, did the heart beat? Was it beating? And that's exactly what the phone call said. It's beating, and you could hear them. You know, somebody's loud voice, it's beating.
And my gosh, when that happened, there wasn't a dry eye in the room. I said that before, I know it's been on the news, but it's absolutely true. I mean, we were all just choked up to hear that heartbeat, you know, beep, 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 you know, when that baboon heart started up. And it looked like a perfectly normal other human heart. It didn't, you know, it doesn't look like a baboon. A heart is a heart.
And, of course, the magical moment is always with any heart operation we do is when we sort of allow the heart to resurrect, to recover. And when it takes that first sort of squeeze, that's truly a miracle.
Finally, the surgery was over, and the nurse called me. She said, the heart is in and beating on its own at 130 beats a minute. And we were thrilled, just thrilled. We hugged each other, and it was just such a wonderful thing.
It was a really, really, really long day because it just seemed like they were never going to get finished. I think it was probably maybe 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We started early that morning before we were able to even go up to Unit 7100.
I and the others that were deeply involved with her essentially camped out in her room, that's true. We took turns somewhat, so we occasionally got home for a shower and something to eat.
And then the work really started because we had to divide our time between what we didn't want to do, and that is meeting the press, having to deal with all the questions, but to spend the majority of our time, for heaven's sakes, taking care of the baby.
The good news is that we have a beautiful, healthy baby up on the unit in the hospital. He was doing everything right as of this hour. We're pleased about that, and in fact, we expected that. The bad news is that as I was shining my shoes this morning, I discovered there's a big hole in my sole, which was not the right thing to have for this morning.
This is News for L.A., Mike Sarge.
Good evening, everyone. A 14-day-old baby girl is fighting for her life tonight after receiving...
It has never been done before, not successfully, and not on a patient so small.
The doctors who transplanted the heart of a baboon into the body of a 2-week-old girl yesterday said tonight the infant's condition is improving.
The transplant is optimistic about the transmission of
known to the world as Baby Faye.
Oh, my goodness. The media, you know, I have respect for the fact that we have, you know, the First Amendment and we need to know, you know, what's going on in the news and all.
There were so many reporters and picketers and so many things that were distractive, you know, at the time. And I was young and I was scared and I wanted everybody to leave me alone. And it just wasn't happening, you know.
Within a day or two, she was awake. She was off the ventilator, and she was beginning to take oral nutrition. And we were all spending hours and hours trying to figure out how to transfer the information that we had from the laboratory to her.
When Stephanie would look at you, she would look like right through you. It was a look that I've never seen a baby have before. It was so deep, it was like she was trying to communicate with your spirit.
She really was special. It was like she knew what she was here to do. I don't know how to explain that. Teresa had gotten a cold, and we were afraid, with the baby being on immunosuppression, that being exposed to her mom, that she might get infected. And at the same time, we all knew very well, and especially nurses know this, you have to have bonding between an infant and their parents, especially the mother.
And I was so afraid that if I went into her room, that since her immune system was low, that she would get sick from that and die from having a cold. And so I was scared to go in her room.
So what happened is they cleared the room very next door to where Baby Faye was, and we had a phone connection set up. And that picture is the epitome of what was going on in those couple of days that we didn't want Teresa with Baby Faye, because she would call on the phone and I would hold the phone to Baby Faye, and Baby Faye would just, she just light up. She knew her mother's voice. It was so beautiful. And it really, it made such a difference to that baby, you know, to be able to hear her mother's voice. It was incredible.
I think I might have been reading her nursery rhyme. And I just talked to her and... she was trying to find me. I never got to hold her after surgery.
Today we grieve the loss of this precious life, which could have been an absolute loss to her loved ones. Her unique place in our memories will derive from what she and her parents have done to give rise to a ray of hope for the babies to come.
To this day, we don't know for sure what all conspired to take her life. But I am comforted in the fact that that we made an effort to save her life. Her family are comforted with the notion that they did all they could do to save baby Faye, to grow up in this world.
The night that Stephanie died, I asked Dr. Bailey to not let this experience be wasted and to keep going forward with it. And he did.
Within a year, we were able to find a human donor for a baby. And so we, at that point, abandoned the cross-species protocol and went straight to human-to-human transplants.
I don't know why it all started with her. You know, God, only God knows. But it had to start somewhere.
Baby Faye's legacy involves two aspects. One is that we accomplished what her parents, particularly her mother and grandmother, had hoped would happen for her. That is, that somebody would try. Sure enough, if we can put a man on the moon, we can at least try. And the other thing that is an amazing legacy of Baby Faye are the thousands of babies with new hearts that are growing up today that will likely help change our world.